3 days. Like Christ rising from the sepulchre, you've come back to consciousness 3 days after going under. Grant frowned at Carlstead's derisive impiety. For what it's worth, Egon continued, neither of us suffered any major trauma, aside from having our hearing temporarily blotted out. Grant still heard that annoying metallic ringing echo to each word Carlstead spoke. Maybe my hearing is permanently damaged, he thought. That's not so bad, considering what might have happened. If we're okay, then why are they keeping us here? 2 reasons. The medics want to make sure we get a complete rest, and your friend Beach wants us kept away from the rest of the station personnel. But that's ridiculous, Grant said. Tell that to your Mr. Beach. None of us is allowed to speak to the news media. By the time the reporters get here, Beach will probably have us shipped off the station. He wants us under wraps, permanently. But you said reporters will find you, Grant. No matter where Beach puts you, they'll ferret you out. Trust me, I know how they work. Grant sank back onto his upraised bed, thinking hard. They can't keep the news secret. I blared it out to the whole world, but Beach and his team can punish us, all of us. He was furious with me, and he's going to do his damnedest to prevent us from seeing the media in person. I hope Egon's right. It's not going to be easy for any of us, though. He spent the rest of the day catching up on the messages that had accumulated. There were 6 from Marjorie, and almost as many from his parents. He stared at Marjorie's face in the tiny screen of the palm comp one of the nurses had loaned him. She was smiling radiantly at him. "I'm so proud of you, Grant," Marjorie said in the headset's earphone. "You've made an enormous discovery, and you saved the lives of your crew." She's acting as if I did it all by myself, Grant thought. He found that he didn't mind that at all. In fact, he basked in the warmth of her smiling admiration. "I love you, Grant, darling," his wife said, "and I miss you terribly. I hope you can come home soon. Sooner. Soonest." Grant adjusted the microphone of the Pomcom's headset so close to his lips that they almost touched it, then whispered a long, rambling, heartfelt message to Marjorie, telling her how he yearned to be with her, how he would take the first vessel heading earthward as soon as the authorities gave him permission to leave the station. But when he tried to transmit the message, the screen glared, access to uplink denied, no outgoing messages permitted. Incommunicado. Maybe the news media would be able to get to him once they arrived at the station, Grant thought. But probably Beach and his people will have moved us by then. It's not going to be as easy as Egon thinks. There were more messages, Grant found. 100 of messages from total strangers that radiated hatred and fury at his godless humanist blasphemy. None of them were from people he actually knew. All strangers. Most of them did not even speak their names. More than one contained a death threat. "It is the duty of God's disciples to strike you dead," said one particularly chilling, ascetic-looking young man. There was also a long list of incoming messages from the news media, but the messages themselves were all blanked out, censored, except for the name and affiliation of the sender. Startled by the hate mail, smoldering at the censorship, Grant composed a long and upbeat message for his parents, keeping it totally personal, assuring them that he was fine, carefully avoiding any hint of scientific information. Still, when he commanded the PomCom to transmit, the screen again answered, "Access to uplink denied." If I ever get back to Earth, he began to realize, it will probably be Siberia. If some zealot fanatic doesn't kill me first. Carlstead seemed unworried, though, confident that the news media would find a way past the new morality stone walls. Grant was not so certain. He tried to put in a call to Dr. Woe, but even that access was denied him. "I'm a prisoner here," he told himself. "Egon and I are being held prisoners. But what about Zeb? Once he's up and around at Selene, he can tell everyone about what we did. Unless he dies there. Unless some zealot gets to him in the lunar hospital." The hours dragged by. Grant felt strong enough to get up and go back to his own quarters, but the nurse on duty told him that he was to remain in the infirmary. Grant at least got to walk the length of the ward, noticing that his and Carlstead's were the only beds occupied. Through the window in the infirmary door, he could see two hefty security guards outside in the corridor. We're in prison. Sleep would not come that night. Grant lay in his bed, wide awake, wondering what would happen to him. The new morality was deciding his fate. Ellis Beach was determining the course of his life. He had to get away, had to break out of this trap. But how? It was almost 6 a.m. when someone entered the still darkened infirmary. More than one person, Grant realized, listening to their footsteps approaching his bed. Assassins? Grant's heart clutched in his chest. He was completely defenseless. There was no place to hide in the darkened infirmary. He couldn't even run away. There was only the one entrance to the ward. It was two men, walking quietly past the empty beds, guided by the pencil beam of a small flashlight. "Which one?" he heard a man whisper. A hesitation. Grant slipped out of bed, fists balled at his sides, legs trembling. Despite his fear, he felt slightly ridiculous, ready to fight for his life in a flimsy, knee-length, open-back hospital gown. "Archer, here's his bed." There were two security guards in uniform. They played the beam of light along Grant's bed, then swung it to catch him standing there. "You're awake." "Good. Come with us." "Where?" Grant asked. "Dr. Woe wants to see you." "Now? At this hour?" "Now. At this hour. Come on, he doesn't like to be kept waiting." "Farewell." Grant threw a robe over his hospital gown and followed the two guards out into the dimly lit corridor. It was still nighttime throughout the station. Dawn was at 7 when the lights in all the public spaces turned up to their daytime brightness. The corridor was empty. No one else was in sight. "This way," said one of the guards. They were both bigger than Grant, hard with muscle, unsmiling. "Dr. Woe's office is down the other way," Grant said. "He's not in his office. Come on." With growing trepidation, Grant went along with them. He couldn't think of anything else to do. His legs felt rubbery, not entirely under his control. The biochips, he told himself. "I can't even walk well. If I tried to run, I'd probably fall on my face. Besides, where could I run to? If these two are zealot assassins," he reasoned, "they would have killed me in my bed, and Egon too." Still, he didn't feel reassured by his attempt at logic. Killers aren't always rational, he knew. With growing desperation, he tried to think of some way out of this, some tactic to save his life. Nothing. He followed meekly, frightened but uncertain of what lay ahead, unsure of what he could do, what he should do, to save his life. "This must be how the Jews felt during the Holocaust," he thought. "Who can help me? Where can I run to?" At last, they reached the heavy metal hatch that sealed off the aquarium. As one of the guards opened it, Grant asked the other, "Are you going to drown me?" The guard's granite face broke into a sardonic smile. "I thought you could breathe underwater." They gestured him through the hatch, then led Grant down the long row of thick windows, the lights from the fish tanks playing fitfully along the narrow passageway. The hard metal floor felt cold to Grant's bare feet. The fish seemed to be watching, big-eyed, their mouths working silently. The dolphins glided along in their tanks, smiling as ever. "Sheena," Grant realized. "They're taking me to Sheena's pen. She'll tear me apart and it will look like an accident." His mind was racing. "Maybe I can get Sheena to help me. If only I could show her that I'm her friend. If only she would overlook that one time I hurt her." Something was blocking the passageway near the gorilla's pen. Grant saw that it was Dr. Woe in his powered chair. The guard stopped a respectful 20 meters from the station director. Grant walked the final steps alone, shakily.